Good afternoon. Well, I'm glad that we have had at least some background on N2O production, so I don't have to describe those complexities too much during this talk, but I'm sure you'll have plenty of questions to ask me along those same lines. It is difficult and it is time-consuming, and hopefully I can talk fast enough that we have time for questions. I'm curious to see what you have to say. This is a project that's part of GRACENET, the Greenhouse Gas Reduction through Agricultural Carbon Enhancement, which is a USDA ALS project. It's a network of scientists across the U.S. Trying to look at ways to reduce greenhouse gases from managed systems. So the purpose of GRACENET is to compare management system impacts, like I just mentioned, and also to look for systems that might be able to mitigate some of the impacts, climate change impacts of management. We were able to join GRACENET because we have a long-term research site at Beltsville, Maryland, which is near Baltimore, Maryland. Plots were established in 1996. We use farm-size equipment. We have coastal plain ultisols, and we're one of the only three long-term agricultural research sites in the U.S. that has both no-till, chisel-till, or kind of a conventional till, and organic systems. So we have a breadth of different types of cropping systems that we can look at some of these fluxes in. What does the literature show? Really briefly, no-till tends to have more N2O emissions than conventional till, sometimes. Sometimes no real differences. There's, of course, soil type effects. In terms of organic systems, there's some evidence that there's not really much difference in organic and conventional systems. There's some evidence, all of it from Europe, that I found that organic has lower N2O emissions than conventional systems. There's very few data, however, in the southeast U.S. in general on N2O emissions. Why might organic systems provide a mitigation option? As the previous speaker mentioned, if you add a lot of crop residues, manures, that you're adding a lot of carbon and nitrate, so you could be increasing your denitrification rate and therefore possibly your N2O emissions. However, in an organic system, you all know this is denitrification, right? That you can increase the rate at which this process goes on with addition of these residues and manures, but it's really the mole ratio of N2O to N2 that's going to have an impact on how much N2O you get. And the N2O mole ratio then is impacted primarily by, primarily by the available carbon to nitrate ratio, as the previous speaker mentioned. pH, oxygen, temperature should probably be in there too, perhaps microbial communities. But if we focus on these primary factors here, available carbon to nitrate is likely to be much higher in an organic system than it is in a conventional system, or in any system that you're depending on organic sources of nitrogen for your nitrogen fertility, such that a higher carbon to nitrate ratio is going to lead denitrification to go to completion to N2 more so than leaking N2O out. So there's the support for the hypothesis that organic systems could provide mitigation of N2O. So these are the cropping systems for the farming systems project. There's five of them. I'm going to talk only about three of them, so you don't have to pay attention to those. We measured the N2O only in the corn phase of the rotation, assuming that that's where we'd have the most N2O fluxes. All systems are corn, followed by a rye, cover crop, followed by soybeans in the second year, and then a winter wheat planted in the fall. The two conventional systems, which are the no-till and the chisel-till, and conventional, I mean that they use synthetic fertilizer and nitrogen and herbicides, stuff like that, focus in this talk on the nitrogen fertilizer. After the wheat is harvested in the third year, double crop soybean is planted, and then we go back to corn. In the three-year rotation, we have the same three-year organic rotation, we have the same crop rotation, but then we have a vetch cover crop that provides the nitrogen for the corn. We also use animal manure, poultry litter specifically, to augment the amount of nitrogen for that organic corn. And in the conventional systems, we side dress and fertilizer in a band in the no-till and chisel-till systems, and all rotation entry points are present each year, allowing us to measure fluxes in corn every year. So again, measured in corn, we have two frames per plot. Here you can, I don't know if you can, how well you can see those, buried in there in the shade between the rows. They are This is the bottom frame, obviously, with the lid not put on them yet. But the frame goes from one row of corn to the other row of corn, covers that expanse. We measured all year long. We measured 2005 to 2008 and 2010. We took four samples from these chambers, these closed chambers, within either 12 or 21 minutes. And we used gas chromatography, obviously, to measure N2O and determined N2O flux based on the linear response over time of N2O. A little bit more on methods. We sampled about weekly from April to November. And again, when soils are wet, to reflect some what the previous speakers talked about. And this, for us, tended to be 20% volumetric water content is where I would make the call that we need to go out and sample. And you see here that this is one of our years, just all our data looking at volumetric water content and N2O flux. And you'll see that at about 20% volumetric water content, that's where we start getting some significant fluxes. And of course, we only get significant fluxes when we have really wet soils. But of course, if it's wet, that doesn't guarantee that you're going to have wet, that you're going to have a lot of N2O, just as the previous speaker mentioned. So we would go out following rain events, try to sample the day after the rain stopped. During the colder parts of the year, December to March, we would sample about monthly. We never have seen any significant fluxes during colder times. And if you look at our relationship between soil temperature and N2O flux, you'll see that we really don't have too many high fluxes below about 10 degrees Celsius. Notice that this scale is a little different than the one above it. And we usually sample mid-morning. Oh, I should mention also that this sampling scheme, trying to get the capture all the peaks that we can is the goal of the sampling scheme, led to sampling 22 to 34 times per year, depending on the year, therefore depending on the weather. Every time we went out, we also measured soil moisture. We measured it at 12 centimeters. We took three measurements per plot. We took the measurements near the gas frames. We used this field scout. I don't know how well you can see that there. But we calibrated that with the FSP soils ahead of time so that our volumetric water content was adjusted from what the machine gave us. Measured temperature as well to 10 centimeter depth every time we measured gases. This is I'm showing one year of data to go through a little bit of what kind of patterns we see. It was obviously in 2005. I don't know if that, okay. Just to show you, this is one of our soil thaw events. We saw nothing in this year, 2005. We don't always get soil freezing in Maryland, so sometimes that's not even that much of a concern. Other times we've measured soil, at soil thawing, we haven't seen any N2O, but not much. And what I want to show then here is that when we add the nitrogen, in this year we added nitrogen broadcast ahead of planting, and we also added it at planting, and then we side-dressed the nitrogen in the no-till and chisel-till systems. And you'll notice that right after we add the nitrogen, we really don't get much N2O flux. So why would that be? If we look down here, this is the soil moisture then on the same scale. You'll notice that right when we're adding the nitrogen, our soil moistures tend to be below about 27 to 30% volumetric water content. And then only once it rains, when we get wet soils again, do we get the N2O flux. So this is very similar to the pattern that the previous speaker talked about in terms of not seeing the N2O until the soils are wet enough. This to me is evidence that we are getting denitrification as the source of our N2O. Otherwise, we would probably get, if we had significant nitrifier N2O, we'd probably get it here, because we're adding, in this case, it's ammonium nitrate that we're adding. And then the pattern this year was pretty phenomenal in that the N2O pattern really followed soil moisture pattern. And that's, so in other words, whenever the soils were not wet enough, we just didn't get any N2O, even after adding nitrogen directly as side dress. This is a typical pattern also in that as the fall goes on, we tend to not see too much N2O flux. I think that's all I want to say about that. I don't want to focus too much on the differences between the systems. I'd be happy to talk about that a little more later. But one thing I want to talk about is how do you then, coming back to this graph, a common way to calculate cumulative N2O then is to draw these lines, these linear interpolations between data points and add up the area underneath the curves and call that your cumulative N2O. Well, that doesn't make sense to me in that that'll depend on how often you sample. the slope of this line here, for example, will depend on when this sampling point was relative to that sampling point, and vice versa afterwards. So what we did, trying to get a little bit better assessment of what N2O flux might be like, is we measured N2O flux 8 continuous days following a major event to develop this curve, this relationship between N2O flux and hours after sampling in this case, so that we could then apply that to our peak measurements, and then we assume then that the N2O flux decreases at according to that equation following that sampling point. I'd be curious to see what people think about that. The alternative would be that to take this data point and draw a straight line over to your next data point and count all that N2O. So that's what we did for this. So when you do that, in 2005, this is kind of the pattern that's generated from that. On the days we didn't sample, we assumed a minimum amount based on lowest rate of flux for that particular system. I just wanted to show 2007, for example, as a comparison to 2005. This was a very dry year, and so just like the previous speaker showed, our biggest N2O fluxes were in the fall after corn has taken up most of the nitrogen. You'll also notice that the scale here is much lower than on this kind of more typical year, so we had much lower fluxes. So in the end, what do we see? We measured N2O for 5 years. In 2005, no differences between our three systems. 2006, we got more N2O in no-till and chisel-till than we did in our organic, and that was significant at 0.05. In 2007, even though our flux were quite a bit lower, our organic had a significantly higher amount of N2O released. 2008, 2010, no differences. 2010 is not complete, of course. Maybe we'll see some differences. When we do a cumulative count of those 5 years, only at 0.1 do we see any significant differences among these different treatments. What we do see, though, is when we add up total amount of nitrogen inputs and look at the cumulative N2ON as a percentage of that total N inputs, we do see significant differences in that the organic system does have lower N2O flux relative to N inputs. And that'd be consistent with the original hypothesis that if you increase carbon to nitrate ratio, you're going to reduce the proportion of nitrate that's denitrified that comes off as N2O. That's, I think, as strong a statement as I can make on that. So as other people have shown, though, that cumulative N2O flux tends to be related to nitrogen inputs in a linear fashion. We didn't see that. In fact, we saw something a little more complex here. So I think this is an interesting reason to study organic systems, because they represent a system that relies solely on organic sources of nitrogen. So I think we can probably learn a little bit more about how to manage N2O by studying these organic systems. Finally, one last point. I have 1 minute, I think. I want to make a point about management in these organic systems. And I'm going to be using data from a postdoc in my lab who looked at potential nitrogen mineralization in these same three systems and found that the organic system has a lot higher potential nitrogen mineralization. It has such high rate, in fact, that when he grew corn in these plots without any additional nitrogen sources that year, the organic corn had very substantially higher yield as in the other two systems, showing that the soil is providing a lot of nitrogen and that we're probably over-fertilizing these organic systems by adding manure on top of a legume, so we could probably reduce the amount of manure we're applying. And that would be a potential way. We might not even know enough about these organic systems to make them a mitigation option if that's a possibility, so that we probably need to reduce manure, and if we do that, we'd probably reduce the N2O flux even further. If I'm out of time, I've already said all this pretty much.
Yeah, we'll have a question. Time for one question.
One. You put your original hypothesis up that carbon nitrate ratio was driving the system. Did you measure carbon?
Great question. We didn't measure carbon, and we didn't measure nitrate. We measured nitrate periodically. We do have CO2 flux values that I could look at in the way that the previous speaker looked at to get a sense of carbon availability. I haven't done that yet. We have measured nitrate periodically, but not every time. I think to get a good nitrate measurement, if you take 6 separate soil cores and you're measuring 34 times a year, that's 180 plus cores in your holes in your field, that gets problematic, and I'm curious to see what other people think about that. I mean, one option, obviously, is to sample less frequently and interpolate in between your points, but...
Some lab stuff, obviously.
For nitrate? Oh, yeah.